Hoot Nikan. Get the Bonabin. That's a Meskwaki greeting. It says, hello, friend. We care for you. And just like the Bible has different words for love, there's filial love, there's agape love, the Meskwaki language has different words for love as well. And this is the closest thing we could come to say, we love you. Get the Bonabin. It's a very deep, heartfelt care for you. So I extend that welcome to you. Again, one thing that we do at Meskwaki Friends, we welcome everybody. And we always say, welcome to Meskwaki Friends. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've been. You're always welcome here at Meskwaki Friends. And today, I want you to say it with me, but I want you to put Bangor Liberty Friends in there. So, welcome to Bangor Liberty Friends. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've been. You're always welcome here at Bangor Liberty Friends. Now, I know in the driveway, as you go out, it says you are now entering a mission field. Make sure you take that message with you. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've been. You're always welcome here at Bangor Liberty Friends. I said that I would introduce myself. If you don't know who I am, maybe you know some of my family members. My father was Lloyd McDonald. Now, he was born and raised at Liberty Friends Church. That was part of Iowa Yearly Meeting. And if you don't know my father, maybe you knew my mother. Her name was Martha Hoskins McDonald. And she was from Pleasant Plain Friends Church in Iowa Yearly Meeting. Now, see, I introduced myself that way because culturally a Native American man would introduce himself in regards to his lineage, his clan, or his tribe. This gives you an understanding of my lineage and heritage, and perhaps might lend me some credibility what I might have to share. That may not seem that important, but a couple years ago, Bernie and I were at Indiana Yearly Meeting, and we spoke, and there was a gentleman there who was a professor at Barclay College down in Kansas. And he had just taken a position as the superintendent of Yearly Meeting for Northwest. So, we kind of knew each other, but not really. After we got done speaking, he came up to me and he goes, I know you. I said, well, I know you too. He goes, no. He goes, I know you. He goes, because when I was doing my master's thesis at Guilford College in North Carolina, I needed a place of solitude. I needed a place of quiet, a place where I could study and write my final papers. And somebody suggested I go to Lloyd and Martha's house. They have this beautiful house in High Point, North Carolina. They have a spare bedroom. I'm sure they'd be welcoming you. And so he stayed with my parents for a week. He goes, when they introduced you as the guest speaker, I thought, just another missionary guest speaker. He goes, but when you introduced yourself as Lloyd and Martha's son, he goes, I hung on every word you had to say. So again, we try to lend some credibility to what we might have to say. Some people know me as Mac McDonald. Some people know me as John McDonald. My Meskwaki friends say that John McDonald is my government name. I have been bestowed my Meskwaki name. It's Beshadu. Doesn't that sound powerful, really bold? Beshadu. Well, until I found out that Beshadu, loosely translated, means the old man. That was bestowed on me by my middle school youth group. But I have a new name that I'm very proud of, and it's Meshu. And Meshu is Grandpa. And again, I mentioned that my wife, Bernie, the co-director, the pretty one, can't be with us today. She has her name, and it's Nenamu. That's the old lady. But her new name is Guku. Not Cuckoo. It's Guku. With a G, well, it's a K, but it's real deep in the throat, so it comes out Guku. I want to share with you about the ministry at Meskwaki Friends, and we practice what they call contextual ministry. And you may have heard us refer to that before, and you're like, what exactly is contextual ministry? Contextual ministry refers to the manner in which a church in every age tends to adapt its teachings to the culture in which it finds itself. So we're in a community serving a Native American group. So we have a tendency to do things their way. If I were to come to Bangor Liberty, I would probably speak on more farm-related stories in the Bible. The threshing floor. The separating of sheep and goats. You know, that type of thing where I could draw you. I'd have to decide whether I was an Iowa State fan or a Hawkeye fan. Because in this area, you never know. There's a quote I'd like to share with you from a book called Meet Generation Z. It's by James Emery White. And this is what he talks about when it comes to ministry or the mission field. He says, I think we all know what a good missionary would do if he were dropped in the darkest recesses of the Amazon Valley to reach an unreached people group. They would learn a language. They would work to translate. They try to understand the customs and rituals. They would work to translate the scriptures, particularly the message of the gospel, into the indigenous language. When it comes to worship, they would incorporate the musical styles, the instruments of the people. They might even attempt to dress more like them. In short, they would try to build a cultural bridge that could into the world of the unreached people group in order to bring Christ to bear. Makes sense. When we talk about translating the language to Meskwaki, I'm not very well versed in Meskwaki language, but we try to use this version of the Bible. It's called the First Nations Version. Right now, I have a copy here that is the Gospels, Acts, and Ephesians. The full New Testament is at the publisher getting its final edit, and we hope to have that soon. It's in English, but it's more of a Native American dialect. Anytime that Jesus' name is mentioned in this, it's not Jesus, it's Creator Sets Free. That's his name. That's not what he does, that's his name. His mother Mary, her name is Bitter Tears. So you kind of get an idea of how these characters in the Bible have different names. And like I said, it has some more Native American undertones. There was a cohort of, I believe, like 20 different Native American Christians that gathered to work on this together. And so we're not dealing with one culture. We're dealing with all the native cultures and trying to make it understandable for everyone. When it comes to worship, we would incorporate musical styles and instruments. Bernie's not here. She's the actual, the musical representative. I play the hand drum. And when I say drum, that makes me a singer. I'm not a drummer. I'm a singer. Even though I may not vocalize anything, when I'm on the drum, I'm a singer. And we've taken, there's only a couple of Native American Christian musicians that write music with Christian lyrics, but what we can do is we can take an existing song and give it more of a tribal beat. One of our favorites is They Will Know We Are Christians by Our Love. In our Wednesday night youth program, I grab the fifth and sixth grade boys, and we sit around the drum and we drum together. And the girls come up and they have rattles and they shake those and we sing all these great songs. So, every week as we gather into our time of open worship at Meskwaki Friends, as a manner of friends, we say this, the Friends Church, the Quaker Church, we don't typically practice a lot of ceremonies or sacraments. However, we believe that a life lived in the example of Jesus Christ is a sacrament in itself. Let me say that again. A life lived in the example of Jesus Christ is a sacrament in itself. Our ministry of Meskwaki Friends is more of a ministry of apostleship. We're not necessarily a ministry of evangelism. I can't tell you, we saved 20 people last year. I don't know what those numbers are, and I can't even tell you how many lives we've touched by walking beside them in a time of need. Bernie and I have been there for 5 years now. In August 2015 is when we arrived. There's been a lot of changes, some good, some bad, but we have a lot of friends. I haven't been doing my slides. What I wanted to share with you today is some of the challenges that we face in Native American ministries. And I like to do that through what I call Did You Know? On December 15th, 1971, the First Amendment to the United States Constitution prevents Congress from making any law regarding an established religion. We freely exercise our religion, we freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble. And this was adopted December 15, 1791, as the First Amendment to the Constitution of the Bill of Rights. Okay, remember that. Okay, everybody got December 15, 1791, we have the freedom of religion. In 1857, the Meskwaki people were moved off to a reservation in Kansas. And they didn't like it there because they can't grow corn. And they're very proud of their corn. They couldn't hunt the animals that they hunted when they were here in Iowa. And so they snuck back. And they hid out on the Iowa River Valley area there in the Tama area. And they were basically forgotten. Somehow, they were able to purchase 80 acres down there on the Iowa River Valley. Thus, they are a settlement, not a reservation. If they own it, it's a settlement. If the government says, here's a plot of land that you can live on, then it's a reservation. So they're very proud of the fact that it's a settlement. And so you'll hear me refer to as the set. Just like when we travel, we might say we're going out to the res. So there's a difference there. Today, they own approximately 7,000 acres. And now a lot of that is good Iowa farm ground, river bottom farm ground that they cash rent out, and that money comes back into the tribe. So not all the money they receive, and they're trying to diversify away from the casino. So they have industry like farming, and they also have a distribution center, and they also have a construction company, and they're trying to spread out their needs. Now, our history books tell us for the next 30 years, from 1857 on, that the Meskwaki people were virtually ignored. Now, keep in mind, the Civil War was going on from 1861 to 1865. We had a few things going on. We didn't have time to deal with that little Indian problem down on the river. So from 1865 to 1877, this 22-year time period, the United States was rebuilding following the Civil War. Up until 1871, the United States had established treaties with different Native American tribes. These tribes were recognized as independent nations. So even within the United States, even within the state of Iowa, we had an independent nation of the Meskwaki Nation. However, the Indian Appropriations Act in 1871 said that the tribes no longer considered nations and that previous treaties with tribes are no longer valid. I don't think that was a mutual agreement. I think what happened is we developed this treaty and we make you a sovereign nation. We just changed our mind. We'll take that paper back. And it didn't hardly seem fair. Let's fast forward a little bit. World War I ran from 1914 to 1918. That's just to kind of give you a time frame. Shortly after that, 1924, the Indian Citizens Act was passed. The law gave Native Americans full citizenship to the United States. Here's your card. You are now a United States citizen. That how it works? However, it wasn't until 1948 that Native Americans were allowed to vote in all 50 states. Let's fast forward to another era. World War II ran from 1939 to 1945. In January 1941, 27 Meskwaki men, 16% of the Meskwaki population in Iowa, enlisted into the United States Army. Meskwaki men used their language to keep the Allied communication secret in actions against the Germans in North Africa, thus the Meskwaki Code Talkers. You may be familiar with the Navajo Code Talkers and what a fantastic job they did in the South Pacific. This is a similar operation, and there were Choctaw Code Talkers, and there were other Native American groups that would use their language to keep the enemy from figuring out what they were talking about. Now, remember, went to 1945, and it was in 1941 that these gentlemen enlisted. However, it wasn't until 1948 that they had the right to vote. So you could serve your country, and as they say, they protected Turtle Island, their land. That's what their main focus was, but they couldn't vote. Now, you remember back in the beginning, I talked about the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, December 15, 1791. A long time ago. I don't think there's anybody in here Maybe Tom remembers that, but no. First Amendment of the United States Constitution prevents Congress from making any law regarding established religion. Free exercise of your religion, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom to peaceably assemble. Well, it wasn't until 1978. Now, I know a lot of us remember 1978. The American Indian Religious Freedoms Act. Until that time, they weren't allowed to practice their faith legally. Now, they did. They snuck off in the woods and had their ceremonies and their celebrations. Native Americans did not have access to sacred places that would traditionally be used for religious ceremony. What if somebody said that you can't go to the Holy Land? You can't go to Salem, Iowa, the first Friends Church west of the Mississippi. You can't go to West Branch. You can't go to those places. But you can practice your, you know what, don't even practice your faith. We would be offended by that. Native Americans were restricted by United States law to the possession of ceremonial items, such as eagle feathers, bones, and peyote. Now, the Friends Church isn't really wrapped up over material items, so it's hard for us to understand. Native American sacred ceremonies were sometimes subject to interference from overzealous officials and curious onlookers. We're gathered here Sunday morning for a time of worship in the Friends Church, Quaker Church. And all of a sudden, a half a dozen Iowa highway patrolmen come walking in the side door, and a couple back there, a couple on the sides, a couple up front. They just want to make sure those Quakers aren't doing anything crazy. They want to make sure we're keeping in line. They just want to make sure that we're not going to stir up any trouble. That's what it would feel like for us, is how it felt like for them. And as recently as the 1960s, Native American children were taken from their homes and placed in boarding schools. And in those boarding schools, they would cut their hair. They'd try to bleach their skin. They wouldn't allow them to speak their native language. And so often these boarding schools were operated and ran by missionaries. So sometimes you wonder, why does the Native North American, why are they so upset with the Mokoman, the Washutu, the Bilagana, the white man? None of those names sound very nice, do they? Mokoman, Wasichu, Bilagana. Those are all different tribes for the same thing as white men. Sometimes we wonder why Native American ministries are such a struggle. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I would trust us, would you? I introduce you to an acquaintance of mine. Not really. Yanaguska. His Indian name was Drowning Bear. He was a Cherokee chief from North Carolina. And he said this, hey, y'all. Well, of course he said y'all because he's from North Carolina. He says, it seems like a good book. Strange that the white people are no better off for having had it so long. Ever wonder what that book he might have been referencing was that we've had for such a long, long time? Another person you might be interested in, a little more familiar with Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull was a Lakota chief and a medicine man. Now, you have to understand that a chief, we all kind of understand, he's the kind of the guy in charge. But a medicine man, he wasn't necessarily a doctor. That wasn't why they called him medicine. Medicine man, he was your pastor. He was your spiritual leader. So Sitting Bull was both a leader and a pastor. And he said this, he goes, our religion seems foolish to you, but so does yours to me. The Baptists, the Presbyterians, and the Catholics all have a different God. Why can't we have our own God? I disagree with him. But I don't know how it was presented to him. I believe that we all worship the same God. I believe he worships the same God that I worship. He chooses to call God creator. I choose to call God God. But God has lots of different names. I'll tell you a quick story that my Meskwaki friends, as we develop relationships and we have conversations, their creation story Now, they don't have a Bible. They don't have anything written down. It's all passed down generation to generation. And what happens is their first memory of creation was clear up north, and the ice age was pushing them south. That's their first recollection. That's when creation was there. And the Creator was with us. And the Creator was with us and His two sons. And one of His sons died and went to heaven to be with the Creator, and the other son walks the earth with us today. Now you tell me, does that sound anything like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit? Over generations, it may have got askewed, but I think their faith, their understanding, who they worship, Getchamanadu, the Great Spirit. We had in our youth program, Bernie had a slide up there, and we were going, what's the most important law is to love God and love others. So it's real simple. We're just going to love God and love others. So that whole year, we talked about loving God and loving others. And she goes, so there's one more thing I want to show you. And she popped up a slide, and it was a picture of a very Native American-looking Jesus. And here's Jesus with his regalia on, and his hands are outstretched, and holes in his hands. And a fifth-grade boy turns around and says, Getchamanadu is Jesus? I said, what? And he said, you mean Creator? He goes, no, Creator is different than Getchamanadu. And so it took a fifth grader to make my mind start spinning about God is different than Christ. Getchamanadu is different than the Creator. So we put those things together. Another person I would introduce you to, Crazy Horse. He was a great Lakota leader. And we say Lakota leader because you don't want to hear me tell you that he's a ferocious warrior. But he's a very wise man, very methodical. And he said this, he goes, this Jesus that the Christians speak of, he sounds like a good man. Why don't they follow his teachings? The greatest sin ever committed against the Native American people was simply that when given the opportunity, the Europeans who traveled across North America neglected to bring us the real Jesus. They brought us greed, hatred, disease, slavery, massacre, and reservations. And they gave it in the name of Christianity. Had they brought us the real Jesus, we would have experienced love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. That sounds vaguely familiar. Let me try that again. Had they brought us the real Jesus, we would have experienced love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. Does it sound familiar to you? I hope it does, because in Galatians 5:22, it talks about the fruits of the Spirit. And the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, and faithfulness. I'd like to share a little bit more of that scripture with you this morning. We're going to bounce around a little bit. We're going to go from Galatians 5, 13 and 15, and then we're going to jump up through 19 through 23. It's interesting, Galatians is a letter from Paul to the early Christians in the community of Galatia. Now, if you research this, Galatia, they're not really sure. It's a Roman province of Galatia in southern Anatolia, or it could be a large region defined by an ethnic group of Celtic people in central Anatolia. So we're not sure if they're Italian descent or if they're Irish descent. So again, we don't know who these people exactly were. But in Galatians 5, 13 through 15, it says, you, my brothers and sisters, are called to be free. Do not use your freedom to indulge in the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. The entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. If you bite off and devour each other, watch out, you'll be destroyed by each other. I'm going to jump ahead to verse 19. The acts of the flesh are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfishness, ambitions, dissension, factions, and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. I warn you, as I did before, those that live like this will not inherit the kingdom of earth. You get that part? Will not. Won't, not maybe won't, but will not inherit the kingdom of the earth. And then Galatians 22 through 23, but the fruits of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there's no law. It's not against the law to be that way. One thing about the sins, acts of the flesh that are so obvious, it is this long, 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 long list. And the final thing is, and the like. You ever have a job description? And in that job description, they'll tell you exactly what you have to do. And the very last line always is, and all other duties assigned. So if it tells us that we're not supposed to have fits of rage and selfish ambitions and drunkenness and orgies, but what if, no, it's and the like. We know the difference. Again, I mentioned that the sign out front as you leave says you're now entering a mission field. And I really, really like that. I've used it when I've shared with other people. So as you leave today, enter your mission field, and remember to take them the real Jesus. Take them love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I'll share briefly about our ministry at Meskwaki Friends. I can either tell you pre-COVID or what's going on right now. Pre-COVID, man, we had this massive youth program. We had, we were going for quality, not quantity. But that's all kind of on the side of the road. Cause the biggest problem is I don't know how to put 30 kids in a 15-passenger van and still maintain social distancing. So right now we're trying to develop where at least once a month we'll be taking a package out to the homes, to the children that have come in the past, and say, you know, we want you to have this. We're still thinking about you. And when we see our kids in town and we see them at school events, and they're like, hey, McInberry, when's church going to start back up? I'm not sure yet. So they're excited. They want to. Our ladies' sewing and crafting ministry is kind of on hold. We've got a lot of the supplies. We got some sewing machines. This is a crafting area that if you, and they make their own regalia, they make their own dresses, and they make their own men's ribbon shirts. But if you don't know how to, you're afraid to ask somebody because you're that skipped generation. And you should be ashamed. Your mother should have taught you better. Your guku should have taught you better. Well, this is a place where they can come and learn to sew and have fellowship with the ladies. So we're really looking forward to that. Sweat lodge ceremony. My friend Gaylord is a Meskwaki man. We built a sweat lodge together. Now, for you who don't understand sweat lodge, it's similar to a very primitive sauna. And we come into this sweat lodge. And we try to do it monthly. With COVID, it's been very sporadic because it's a very confined area. And there's four rounds to the sweat lodge ceremony. And the first round is you share who are you and what are you seeking from the Creator. And as you go around the circle and you share all this, then they sing a prayer. And then we all pray out loud, just over the top of each other. And we're adding water to the heated rocks. And we go into our second round. And the second round is, who do you know that needs prayer? Who do you know that needs help? And so we go around the circle and we share that. And then we sing another prayer. And we go into a time of very intense prayer. Depending on how hot it is between the second and third round, we might take a break. As we go into the third round is the healing round. Who do you know that needs healing prayers? And so forth. And then the final round is the praise round. We just give thanks to God for everything that He provides for us. And my favorite part is once the ceremony is all done, go back and there's a feast. And it's usually traditional Native American food with fried bread, and there might be buffalo, and there might be squash. Wabagun is squash. Wabaganu is mouse. So be careful that you don't say, excuse me, would you pass the mouse, please? Very tricky language. Our ministry is very different. It's all about being with the people. We recently realized that we have a snowplow ministry. You get snow removal on the settlement, but there's a priority list. First, they got to do the streets and the school, and the tribal center and the medical clinic. They got to get those clear right away. Well, then they by the residents, they go to seniors with medical problems first. And then they go to the seniors. And then they go to the people with lots of children. And you know, and they go down a list. And then they said, if it feels like we skipped your house, we did. Because we have a priority list that we have to go down. Well, so the middle-aged couple who has full employment and maybe only has one or two kids at home, they may be the last ones on the list to get their driveway plowed. And I got to get to work at Lenox in Marshalltown. I'm working second shift. Hey, can you help us out? Yeah, we've got a Polaris Ranger with a snow plow. We've got a tractor. We can run across the settlement and we can help you out. So it's interesting to have a snow plow ministry and a lawn mowing ministry. We take care of a couple people's yards before the annual powwow. And I don't know if you've ever driven by the powwow grounds there in Tama. Before powwow, grass is about this tall. They only mow it once a year. And they come in with tractors and they make tall grass short. And then the people come in and say, this is my campsite. And they start mowing and trimming and raking and make it really nice. But there's people that don't have access to that kind of thing. And so I offer up to the friends of ours in the community, hey, if you need help cleaning up your site at the powwow grounds, just let me know. And I've gone over to help. So again, we have a snowplow ministry. We have a lawn mowing ministry. Drug and alcohol ministry is huge in our community. We have an AA meeting at our place. We call it the Recovery Family. Pre-COVID, we were having recovery supper on Monday nights. And then while the people go to their meeting, Bernie stays and does child care. So you got this combination of two. We haven't had the supper because of COVID, but I think we're going to start back here pretty soon. White Bison Wellbriety. White Bison Wellbriety is very similar to AA, but it has its foundations in drug and alcohol recovery, but it's much deeper than that. It's about total wellness, the mind, body, spirit. And we've been able to be the conduit between this program and the Meskwaki's drug and alcohol treatment program and having meetings there. And again, we got this started. They got this started March 1st. And by March 15th, we had to shut it down because we couldn't go. And it hasn't started back up. So I would ask to keep that in your prayers. There was a White Bison Wellbriety. White Bison Wellbriety. Yes, wellness, Wellbriety. There's another, a lot of our communities have abuse prevention coalitions within the community. They were starting a abuse prevention coalition on the settlement. And the grant that they receive says you need to have somebody from the police department, you need to have somebody from the guidance counselor's office at the school, you need to have somebody of spiritual representation. Well, they don't have any churches, they don't have any pastors, they don't have any of that at Meskwaki, so they came to Bernie and I. And so we are their spiritual representation for the Abuse Coalition. So we do this as part of the community. Some of the successes we've seen, and I hate to call them successes because God has just laid them out there. Some of you know that I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I was invited into the American Legion on the settlement, which is a huge honor to me. Powwows outdoors. When we first got there, powwow, okay, I get it. You can drum, you can dance, whatever, you know. And after about 30 minutes, I'm bored. But now I'm starting to understand the dancing. I'm starting to understand the music. But I did not like indoor powwows. I'm just too confined. But New Year's Eve, we were getting ready to go to the New Year's Eve powwow, and we were pretty excited because we're going to see our friends. And I showed up, and a guy from the American Legion says, "Oh, Mac, I'm so glad you're here." He goes, "We need another flag bearer to dance in the flags for the grand entry." So here's the old white guy dancing, kind of, as best I can, into their ceremony. And what a tremendous honor that was. The relationship that we have with the Meskwaki veterans is unique. We've been invited to sit in. Just recently, I was invited to sit at the drum for a ceremony called Drum Dance. And again, this is like Meskwaki Church. Doesn't have a schedule, just kind of whenever the Spirit moves. And it can last 3 hours. So we'll go into a time of prayer, singing, and dancing. And then we take a break, have a potluck dinner, And then we come back for more praying and singing and dancing. So it's fantastic. I could go on and on, but I'm not going to. I want to be respectful of your time. But I would like to share with you, I would like to lead you into a time of open worship and silent prayer. The Friends Church or the Quaker Church doesn't typically practice a lot of ceremonies and sacraments. We don't typically practice the ceremony or sacrament of communion. However, we believe that a life, an example of Jesus Christ, is a sacrament in itself. We believe that spiritual communion with God is experienced during our time of open worship and silent prayer. Finally, we don't believe in the necessity to burn incense, but at Meskwaki Friends, we add another element. We worship with our sense of smell. In Ephesians 5, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God." And this was when we would light our sage and bring that pleasing aroma to God. I'd like to invite you into a time of reverent silence before God as we center into a time of open worship that our Quaker heritage has taught us. Wait upon the Lord. Listen to God's voice within your heart. Seek to be quiet and attentive and focus on God rather than yourself. Be prepared to respond to the leading of the Holy Spirit as revealed in this, our Holy Communion.